Side 9, The Legend of Luke, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 359. Honeysuckle perched gingerly on the footstool, which she thought was a small chair, casting a jaundiced eye in Beau's direction.
"I'd hate to be standing next to that long-eared rabbit in a famine season. Where does he put it all? No thanks to you, Gonf. You fetched him here, and that tribe of starving otters, too. We'll soon be eaten out of house and home."
Gonf tweaked the shrew wife's cheek slyly.
"Well, me beauty, you don't want victuals going stale in the larder. Not while you're away on the nice trip that Furmo's planned for you."
"Trip? Furmo never told me about no trip."
"Aha, that's 'cause he wants to surprise you, pretty one. How do you fancy a nice boat trip to Redwall Abbey?"
"Ow, ow, bless his good heart. Is there nothing Furmo wouldn't do for me? What a wonderful, thoughtful beast he is."
Furmo waggled a paw in his numbed ear.
"Oh, give your wailing a rest and pass the beer."
"What was that you said, Furmo Logalog?"
"I said, my love's unfailing. Nothing but the best for you, my dear."
Squeaks of fright from the little ones caused Martin to leap up, sword in paw. A dark shadow circled overhead, suddenly dropping like a stone into their midst. The great goshawk, Krar Woodwatcher, folded his wings and bowed courteously.
"Oh, joyous day! Thou hast returned to my fiefdom, Prince of Mouse Thieves, and thou too, Martin, Warrior of Redwall."
Gonf nodded formally with appropriate regal disdain.
"Lack-a-day, sirrah! Have thou a care, landing in such manner amongst the babes of Furmo, our faithful vassal?"
Krar lowered his beak to the ground in the face of such royal displeasure from the Prince of Mouse Thieves.
"Alas, 'twas not my intention to affright the babes thus, Prince. My hasty landing was prompted by a desire to be in company with thee and thy noble beasts once more."
Martin allowed his foot paw to touch the lethal beak. Krar did not see him exchange a wink with Gonf.
"I pray you, Prince Gonf, be not wrathful with our friend Woodwatcher, for we know him to be a good and honest bird. Tarry with us, Krar. There are victuals aplenty here."
The huge, fierce goshawk awaited Gonf's decision. Sensing he had pushed his luck far enough with the dangerous bird, Gonf smiled magnanimously, patting the ground at his side.
"I spoke in haste. Come, sit thee beside me, my faithful friend. It comes to my mind that one who battled with a swan in our defense must surely be worthy of our hospitality."
Honeysuckle nudged Furmo, almost knocking him over.
"D'ye hear that? Why don't you learn to speak like Gonf and Martin? Proper gentle beasts they are."
Beau sat watching in open-mouthed admiration as food vanished down Krar's beak at an alarming rate.
"Great seasons of starvation! D'ye suppose that chap'll be able to fly when he's finished scoffing what-what?"
Trent could not help teasing the hare with a wry comment.
"I wonder if the Redwall Abbey kitchens will have enough food to keep up with the both of you."
Dinny shook his head at the hedgehog maid's observation.
"Bri, miss, I hadn't thought of that. Them two'll keep ye cooks girtly busy, I'm certain of that."
Traveling upstream was not difficult as they traced back their original path. Tungro's tribe were strong swimmers, and they weaved in and out of the growing flotilla of shrew logboats surrounding the honeysuckle, lending strong paws wherever they were needed. On a lazy golden afternoon, Gonf lay stretched out beneath the stern awning, tossing hazelnut pieces in the air and catching them in his mouth. Martin was napping nearby, whiskers gently twitching against a curious midge bent on investigating his face. A fragment of nut, which Gonf had missed, bounced off Martin's nose, and he opened one eye slowly.
"You mind not disturbing me? It's not often I get the chance of an odd snooze."
Gonf aimed another piece of nut at his companion.
"Snooze? How can you talk about snoozing, mate? We're nearly home. I'll be seeing my Columbine soon. Ha ha! And that gauntlet of mine. Wonder if he's grown at all.
Martin stared up at the changing leaf patterns, blinking as the sun traced through, blurring the edges.
Oh, I imagine Gauntlet will be tall enough to cause us more trouble, young scamp. Hope the work on our abbey has progressed without too much bother. I bet Bella's missed us, though the kitchen crew will probably be glad you're gone. Pies can lie cooling on window sills in safety.
Ha! Not with my Gauntlet running loose, they won't.
In one smooth motion, Tungro slid aboard the skiff. He whispered urgently to Martin.
We're due to run into trouble, I think.
The warrior lay still, though his paw was seeking his blade.
What makes you think that, friend? Well, I can hear a waterfall somewheres up ahead, but that ain't really it. Some beasts are following us. I saw movement in the trees, ripples in our wake, and I think they're up ahead of us, too.
Immediately Martin arose, sword in paw.
Sounds like they've got us surrounded, eh, Gonf? You two stop here. I'll go and take a peek.
Gonf crawled out on deck and took stock of the situation. Tungro's otters were in the water, guarding the shrew logboats, which Fermo had grouped around the honeysuckle. Only the stream sounds and the distant waterfall broke the ominous silence. Suddenly the soft autumn noontide had grown dangerous. Krar perched upon the honeysuckle's prow, watching keenly. Fulgrim had his axe out and was standing in the stern of the back logboat. Fermo and his Goo-Awesome crouched, rapiers drawn. Gonf held up his paws, signaling every beast to wait. His eye caught a movement in a tree-shaded shallow. Then the mouse thief relaxed, waving his paws for the crew to stand down. He shouted then, his voice cutting the stillness.
Ha-har! I'll bite your tail off and stuff it down your ear!
A gruff voice responded from the shallows.
Surrender, Mousy! You're surrounded, mate!
Gonf gave a broad wink to the Goo-Awesome shrews.
Surrounded? You great lard barrel, stay there. I'm coming to surround you, you 40-faced frog flusher.
Hurling himself from the deck, Gonf hit the water with a loud splash and threw himself onto the creature, which sped out from the bank. Stream water boiled in chaos as the pair met, roaring and bellowing.
Garraway Bullow, you bang-tailed river dog! I knowed it was you all along. Take that! Whoopery-hoo, Gonfo! Don't try to fool me! You was scared out of your mousy wits. Admit it! Scared? I've been scareder of dead logs floating in the water. Only thing I'm scared of is that you won't have supper ready, you whiskery, water-wet pudding-walloper!
Yelling with delight, Fulgrim and Tungro dived into the water.
Eddie Garraway! Tis us, your nephews! Oh, no! Lock the larders! It's Bargood's brats! Look at the size of them! My poor sister must have starved to death trying to feed them. Gonfo, get them off me!
Otters of Garraway's tribe began popping up everywhere, shouting to the otters from Tungro's crew, who yelled back at them. Trimp looked to Martin, who was chuckling and shaking his head at their antics.
It looks like the two tribes are related. We're surrounded by aunts, uncles, nieces, and nephews. Yah!
A large pawful of soggy bank mud caught Martin full on the nose. Both groups of otters were so happy to see each other that they had started a mud fight. The remainder of the honeysuckle's crew and Fermo's shrews did not hesitate. Laughing madly, they leaped into the water, joining in the fun. Right along the bank they fought, slinging heaps of sludgy brown mud at one another, slipping, sliding, and splashing as they pelted away furiously. Mud was everywhere. Swiftly aimed globs of the sticky goo splattered, sticking to fur, spikes, muzzles, paws, and tails. A practically unrecognizable hedgehog maid stumbled into what appeared to be a small, moving mud mound.
Is that you, Miss Tramp?
Of course it is. Who are you?
Only a little chug. Take that.
Yutch! You filthy imp, don't chuck mud at me. Throw it at those otters. They started it.
I throw muds at every beast. Here's some more for you.
Whiz, splat, splotch, whop.
Only Krar remained aloof, perched on the skiff's prow, shaking his head in disgust at the undignified spectacle. Zounds! 'Tis surely a day of fool's delight. These river dogs are a mad species, methinks.
Yarch!
A mud-covered bow stooped to gather more.
Oh, well hit, Feathering Saul. Maybe that'll spoil a great pompous featherbag's appetite, what?
Evening had fallen by the time both sides had wearied of mud-throwing and washed themselves off in the stream. Queen Garraway below took a last chance to grab her nephews and duck them soundly. Gaunt waded over.
Ahoy! What's going on here? Trying to drown off your kin? That's right, Gonfo. Disrespectful rascals. I'll teach him to address me as Your Majesty, not Auntie Garraway. Well, friend, we'd best rest up a while, then I'll have my crew rig blocks and tackles to pull your pretty boat over the waterfall. 'Tis the least I can do for such fighters.
Fulgrim broke the surface, blowing water.
Aye, 'cause if you don't, your name'll be mud forever.
39. Milk-white mist covered the land up to the height of a tall elm tree. Early dawn silence lay over Redwall Abbey, disturbed only by muted birdsong from afar. It was an hour after dawn. Skipper and Bella leaned on the north battlements, with Gauntlet between them. Keeping a paw behind the little mouse, Bella cautioned him, "Stay away from the battlement edge. Your mum'll have a word or two to say if I let you fall." Gauntlet stamped his paws in frustration, peering into the blanket of mist.
"When'll my daddy be's coming back, Skip?"
Skipper set the tiny fellow on his shoulder, out of harm.
"Oh, don't you fret, mate. He'll come back soon now. Maybe later on, when the mist lifts."
Gauntlet tugged the otter's ear.
"Fwah! You say that all the time, every day, Skip."
Columbine's voice sounded from the lawn below.
"Hello, Bella, Skip, where are you?"
"Up here, marm, west corner of north wall."
Columbine came up the wall steps carrying a tray, which she placed on the wall.
"Gracious, you three are up here early today. Surely there's not much point yet, with all this autumn mist about. Gauntlet, shouldn't you still be in your bed?"
"No, no, it's my turn to watch for Daddy. Miss Bell and Skip helping me. My daddy comes soon, you see."
Columbine stroked her son's head fondly.
"Yes, I'm sure he will. Oh, look, the mist is turning gold. Come and have some breakfast now. The sun will burn all this mist away before long."
Columbine stayed on the ramparts with them. Still surrounded by the cocoon of golden autumnal mist, they ate bowls of hot oatmeal with fresh berries and honey. With otters hauling and shrews pushing, the skiff honeysuckle slid over the ditch and out of West Mossflower's trees onto the path. It was the same spot where Trimp had met Ferdy and Cogs a season before. Gonf called through the mist to Martin,
"Hoist the sail, matey!"
Fermo shook his head at the mouse thief.
"What do you want the sail spread for, matey? We're in a fog. There ain't a feather of breeze nowheres to stir your sail."
Taking a brightly colored guasim headband, Gonf bound it about his brow. He climbed to the prow and struck a pose.
"You and the breeze can do what you like, Logalog. But if I'm coming home, then I'm going to arrive in style, eh, Martin?"
His friend joined him on the prow, drawing his sword and pointing forward in an equally heroic pose.
"Right, mate. Let's go home."
Fermo nodded admiringly at the pair.
"That's the way, crewmates. Come on, every beast, we'll grease the wheels, comb our whiskers, haul the ropes, and sing our friends home every bit of the way. You all know journey's end. Trimp, you take the top harmony. I'll do the baritone, and Garraway the bass. 1, 2, 3.
Away the honeysuckle rolled down the path, with her crew pulling the head ropes, two tribes of otters and a tribe of guasim crowding around to push. Martin, Gonf, Denny, and Trimp, the original four who had set out from the abbey, all standing in the prow. Krar perched on the masthead, keeping a firm grip on Chugger, who still considered himself captain. Now the sun was beginning to thin the mist. They could see through it. As they rounded a bend by a grove of oaks, the singing suddenly died, and the honeysuckle rolled to a halt. Every beast looked up and saw Redwall. Floating above the golden mist like a vision from some wondrous dream, South Gable reared to the soft blue skies, with the weather vanes standing proud atop the dusty, rose-colored sandstone buttresses. It was a magical, breathtaking sight. For one awestruck moment, they all stood, gazing dumbly. Then a mighty cheer broke out. Denny chuckled proudly, through tears he was unable to check.
"Yonder be my home."
Gauntlet sprang from Skipper's shoulders onto the northwest corner battlement, which was higher than the rest. Skipper held out his paws for the little mouse to jump back down again.
"Come off of there, matey. You can't see anything yet in this mist."
Columbine sensed something. She looked up at her son. "Gauntlet, what is it?"
"I hear him, Mama. Listen. Daddy comes home. Listen."
Faintly at first, but growing in volume, the sound of many beasts singing reached the wall tops. Bella scrambled up onto the battlement and laughed aloud with joy.
"There's a ship coming down the path! A ship! Would you believe it, friends? I see them! I see them!"
High into the sunny morning, the song rang out. "Marching home, marching home, jolly friend, jolly friend, traveling on until our journey's end. So away with all your fears, smile with me, forget those tears. Though the road was long and dusty, we survived and arrived. Tramp, 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 lay your head down where you camp. It ain't your home or fireside. Tramp, 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 moorlands dry or forests damp, sharing together side by side. Marching home, marching home, jolly friend, jolly friend, o'er each highland, around each river's bend, keep your chin up in the rain, soon we'll be back home again. Though my paws are worn and weary, never fear. Oh, my dear, left, right, onward, mate, by day or night, lean on my shoulder now, old friend, left, right, gray the day or sunlight bright, until we reach our journey's end, marching home, marching home."
Bella's shouts boomed like thunder over the lawns.
"Rouse yourselves, Redwallers, they're back! Turn out the cooks! Open the gates! They've come back home!"
As Ferdy and Cogs flung the outer gates wide, Columbine allowed Gauntlet to dash off and meet the ship. He was swept aboard and lifted onto his father's shoulders. Ferdy and Cogs, still in their nightshirts, held the outer wall gates wide open. With all the creatures of Redwall pushing it, the skiff Honeysuckle sailed regally inside, halting in the center of the main lawn. Gonf leaped down with Gauntlet still on his shoulders, swept Columbine up and hugged her tight.
"Your Prince of Mouse Thieves is returned, m'lady!"
Chaotic greetings broke out everywhere.
"Oh, Dinny, our faithful Formole, how we missed you, my friend! Welcome home, welcome home!"
"Thank ye, Miss Bell. I missed ye too, aye, so gertly that I be lost and for words, marm."
"Uncle Warthorn, it is you, ain't it?"
"Well, rip me rudder, so 'tis. Don't tell me you're Bargood sons. Look at the size of you both. What were you fed on, boulders and logs? Forget Warthorn. Call me Skip. Here, come and meet Mayberry and Catkin. I think they're your cousins, but I'll let you know when I works it out.
Ferdy, Cogs, hello there, 'tis me."
"Why, so 'tis, Miss Tramp. You look taller, I think." "Aye, and pretty as ever. Good to have you back, me dear."
"I name Chug, only a little squiggle, but lots of trouble."
"Me called Gauntlet. I lots of trouble too, Chug."
"Ahoy there, Skip. Whoopery-hoo to you. Let go of those two bullies and shake your otterkin's paw, you old rascal."
"Ha-har! Gar away below, me old heart's delight. Come here, me second cousin twice removed and long-tailed on your grandma's side."
Amid the shouting and laughing as old friends were reunited and new ones made, A small, stooped figure, leaning on a blackthorn stick, shuffled across the lawn. Every beast made way for Abbess Germaine. Mayberry and Catkin hurried forward, assisting her to the honeysuckle's prow, where Martin stood waiting to meet her. Drawing his sword, he knelt, laying it at the old mouse's footpaws. She smiled.
"Martin of Redwall, you have returned to us, my friend."
"Aye, Mother Abbess. It was a good journey, a long and eventful summer. I am happy to be back at Redwall." The Abbess Germaine waved her stick at the strange craft standing in the middle of the lawn with a great goshawk perched on its prow.
"An eventful summer indeed, Martin. What is all this?"
"That is Logalog Furmo's skiff, Honeysuckle, named after his good wife, Marm. Yonder noble bird is Krar Woodwatcher, a valiant fighter, and a great friend to us. These shrews are Gooawesome, and we have with us two tribes of otters, the tribes of Queen Garraway Bullo and the brothers Fulgrim and Tungro." Abbess Germaine silenced Martin by raising her paw.
"Enough! You will confuse my old mind if you carry on further, Martin. Welcome, welcome to you all. Peace be with you. May you find happiness and joy within Redwall Abbey. If there is anything you need for me or my Redwallers, please do not hesitate to ask for it."
In the brief silence which followed this announcement, the old hare confronted the abbess with a courteous, though slightly creaky, bow.
"Beauclerc Feathering Solcos Fortingham at your service, Marm. I was wondering what, if perchance you maybe had a slight, begging your pardon, of course,
Germaine nodded. She understood him completely.
"I take it you are hungry, Mr. Cusfordingham?"
Beau nodded eagerly, still stammering.
"Quite, thank you, Marm. I am mayhap a little, shall we say, peckish?"
Smiling broadly, the old abbess took his paw.
"I never knew a hare who was not hungry, sir. We have been preparing since the back end of summer for such an event, and we have plenty enough for every beast, including you, sir. Is everything ready, Bella?"
The badger mother nodded, pointing toward the orchard.
"By the time the mist has risen completely, cooks, servers, cellar hogs, helpers, to your stations for the feast."
A mighty cheer arose into the autumn morn as the Redwall helpers hurried off to the kitchens for their trolleys. Paw in paw, all the guests strolled off behind them, chatting animatedly at the prospect of Redwall hospitality.
"A feast, eh, what? Hope there's enough for all this lot, what?"
"Sir, you bain't never been to a Redwall feast. There be enough good victuals to keep twice this year number a-goin' for a full season. Hurray!"
"Ahoy, Ferdy! Wait'll you see old Krar take to the victuals. That bird could make you look like a dibbin' at table."
"We'll see about that, Gonf. What about yon hare?"
"Ho-ho! Don't even ask, matey. His name should have been Famine, not Feathering Sol. Don't sit next to him."
"I sit by you, Gonflin. We eats every fink up, eh?" "Oh, yes. But later, Chug, come with me. We pinch a pies off the windowsill. Stay still coolin'. Hee-hee!"
"Looks like you got double trouble there, Miss Columbine."
"You could be right, Skip. Treble trouble if you count Gonf. But better the trouble that we know, and at least they're home safe and sound."
"Grr, oh, Marm, bain't it a wonderful word?"
Epilogue. Extract from the journal of Germaine, Mother Abbess of Redwall Abbey. It is winter now, a time for sitting round the fire in Cavern Hole and storytelling on long, dark evenings. By the time next winter arrives, our abbey will be completely built. Never have we had so many welcome and useful guests. This beautiful desk I am sitting at was made by the tribe of Tungro, as is all our furniture. What wonderfully skilled craftsbeasts those otters are. His brother Fulgrim is to stay here and live with us. He and Skipper have become inseparable. Many of our guests will stay permanently.
It gives me great joy. They are good, hard-working creatures. Trimp and Chugger are now part of Gaunt's family. How could they not be happy with two such as our Prince of Mouse Thieves and his lovely wife, Columbine? Every beast here says that I still have many seasons in front of me. I hope so. Redwall is such a joyous place to be. I look forward each morning to breakfast with my close companions, Berg and Beau. I wish I could have gone sea-roving with them in my younger seasons. What adventures they have had! Martin seems to have regained his old zest for life. He is not the troubled warrior any more. It was a wondrous tale he had to tell, both of himself and his brave father Luke. It was also very sad at times. But does not sadness mingle with joy to make us grow fully into the creatures we are? Strangest of all, though, he showed me something from a beaded linen bag which belonged to his poor mother. It was a woven tapestry of his grandsire, who was also called Martin. The picture is of a mouse in armor, bearing a great sword. I was amazed. It looked like Martin himself, to the very life, though he said to me that it reminded him greatly of Luke, his father. Columbine has had a lovely idea. She thinks that the picture might form a centerpiece for a big tapestry, which would someday hang in Great Hall. When I look at the picture, I know it is our Martin. I think that he and his ancestors have always been warriors, champions, whose spirits exist to inspire good, honest creatures. Martin has also done a remarkable thing. He has decided to give up his sword and live a life of peace. He has done so much to help found our abbey that no creature could deny him the right to do this. The goshawk, Krar Woodwatcher, has hidden the sword where Martin directed him to put it. The only hint he gave of the great sword's location was to me and no other. These are his words. Above where autumn's mists do rise, where I beheld with mine own eyes, my dream, my vision, hovering there, one morn upon old moss flowers' air. Then he said a strange thing to me, which I will tell to you. I stand here in this world alone. No kin of mine to take the sword, no son or daughter of my own, a bitter and a sad reward. But Redwall, in its hour of need, will bring forth one to follow me. To that one, valiant indeed, I leave a warrior's legacy. Then he would talk no more of such matters. Now, if I want to find him, I have only to follow the sound of our abbey babes, the Dibbons, laughing and playing. Martin will be there, joining in with them. Gonf, too. They are both enjoying a newfound happiness, though I doubt that our Prince of Mouse Thieves ever really grew up. Perhaps Martin is making up for the lost seasons of his youth. Who knows? It does every Redwaller's heart good to see him thus. Well, my friends, I am tired now. That is the privilege of an old abbess, burdened with so many long seasons. I will go down to Cavern Hole and sit in my big chair by the fire with a blanket on my lap. There I can listen to the songs and the stories, watch the young ones dance and play, drink some hot cordial and drift off into a warm sleep while winter rains outside in the night. I won't say goodbye to you, because one evening you may drop by to share this good life with us. You know you are always welcome at Redwall Abbey. All you need to bring with you is a ready smile and an open heart. Germaine, Abbess of Redwall. End of The Legend of Luke by Brian Jakes. Illustrated by Fangorn. Read by Brian Kahn. In the studios of the American Printing House for the Blind, Louisville, Kentucky, for the Library of Congress. June 2000. Published by Philomel Books, a division of Penguin Putnam Books for Young Readers, 345 Hudson Street, New York, New York, 10014. Further reproduction or distribution in other than a specialized format is prohibited. If you found any cassette in this book to be defective, please place a rubber band or piece of string around that cassette for identification. Place it in the container on top of the front stack of cassettes.